The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Unfortunately, in light of the uncertainty around health and safety in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, I have to set my wishes aside from the wellness of my family, community, and beyond. Because of this, I have decided to opt out of the 2020 college football season, and I will be taking the next steps in my journey by declaring for the 2021 NFL Draft. Minnesota will forever be a place I'm looking up to call home. Thank you. From the bottom of my heart, I love you all. Bateman out.
A major move by Minnesota star receiver Rashad Bateman to leave school, foregoing his junior season in favor of preparing for the NFL draft amid the coronavirus pandemic that has caused many to rethink their playing status. You can see by the video that Bateman has a bright future at the next level. But check out what the experts are saying about his NFL abilities. Mel Kiper Jr. tweeted that Bateman is the eighth best prospect on his board for the 2021 draft. And our Todd McShay also has Bateman going in the first round of the draft. Not bad for the reigning Big Ten receiver of the year. With over 1,200 yards and 11 touchdowns for the 10th ranked Gophers last season. On that note, thrilled to bring in the man himself, Rashad Bateman. And Rashad, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We talked to Marquise Goodwin, who's obviously at the NFL level, about his decision to opt out. But I'm so happy to have someone in the college ranks here. So you had mentioned that this is the toughest decision that you've ever had to make. I know how much you love football. What were the main reasons why you decided to opt out?
For me and my family, the only concern that we had was health. I have asthma, so just talking to my family, and we felt like it was the best decision for me. I didn't want to put anybody else in my family or peers at risk of getting this, because me and my family, we felt like there's just not enough answers for us to move forward yet. So we felt like it was the best decision for me.
Rashad, how long did it take you discussing it with your family to come to your decision?
It took us a while. As soon as opting out was an option, we immediately started thinking about stuff. But it was a long, tough process. It is the hardest decision that I've ever made.
Rashad, I want to ask you this. We had Paul Feinbaum on earlier. Okay, thank you. And then you can jump in, Max. So we had Paul Feinbaum on earlier, and he was mentioning the story with Colorado State football players, that they were encouraged by their coaches not to reveal their symptoms, also staff members. I'm just wondering what the conversations were like with your peers. Were you hearing anything like that? And are the other players also fearful of playing?
I'm in the Gopher football program. You never know. I've talked to a couple of guys. They feel like the university could keep them safe. And there's some that may be worried about it, just because a lot of us around the country don't feel that it's safe to play right now. But I guess we'll see what they'll do moving forward.
Rashad, I put myself in the position of a student athlete who's likely to be drafted at the professional level. And think about this upcoming season. Part of my decision-making process, I think, would be my skepticism that there would be a season in the end, that they would at least complete it, that there may not even wind up completing the season, I would think. And that might factor into the decision. Did anything like that factor into yours?
No, not at the moment. My health, with me having asthma, with my family and my goddad, I can't really see the family that I usually see. So, and just like me personally, with asthma, I just couldn't risk that, for my own life. So that's really why I made a decision.
But now, in terms of the NFL, what if what you're walking into when you are drafted in at that time, things haven't changed much, and you have the ability to play in the NFL as a professional and be paid well and the whole thing and play at the next level, but there is a similar risk involved. Would you opt to wait until this is all over? Would you have to examine the precautions that they're taking? If the NFL planned on just proceeding as they do now, is that something that you would participate in, or would you sit that out too?
I would definitely sit that out too. because I feel like my health comes first. I feel like everybody's health comes first in our lives, and I wouldn't want that for myself or anybody else. Marquise Goodwin, I saw what he did, and like I respect him for doing that because a lot of people don't have the courage to do that, and I feel like I have the courage to do that, and that's why I made the decision I did.
Yeah, not to be cheesy, but obviously health is wealth. So it sounds like you made the right decision for you and your family. Rashad, how will you handle now in terms of training and trying to continue working on your craft with obviously protecting yourself with COVID protocols?
I'm still working through some things right now, but hopefully I can get in the area where that's safe and where I can start training and things like that. So I'm still working through some things right now, but hopefully moving forward, everything will be taken care of.
All right.
And what,
Rashad Bateman, thank you. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
What do you plan on showing the NFL as you prepare for the draft? What kind of player is the team that drafts you getting?
Everything that they need. And I want to show them that no matter that, because I'm taking a year off, that I'll be ready for whatever's thrown at me. I'll be ready to participate in the best league with the best competition there will be.
All right. Rashad, thank you so much for the time this morning. I know this was such a tough choice for you and how much you love football, but it seems like the mature choice as well.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
It was a great pickup. You know, you have to draft the best player on the board. Everybody understands that. And I think he's a great receiver. I think, you know, with me and Michael Gallup going for 1,000 yards last season, I think the expectation is to have 3,000 yard receivers this year.
All right, Louis Riddick here with us now. Amari Cooper opening up about the new receiver in town, the Cowboys drafting CeeDee Lamb. Max, I'll start with you on this one. Do you feel like Cooper's comments are good or bad for the Cowboys?
I don't think they're good or bad, but if you want me to choose one of the two, I'll say good. First of all, who wouldn't want a guy like Amari Cooper on their team, right? A number one receiver who takes less money to stay, who put him in man coverage, see what happens. Like, he'll beat his guy. He's not a top three, maybe not even five wide out, but he's a legit number one on a lot of teams. He's a legit number one. And with that attitude, not like where his ego is like, I gotta be the guy, like, hey, we're gonna spread it around. There are two other guys who can get down like me. Just the kind of tone you want set. And so I would say that really the pressure is on Dak, as we know. Maybe the offensive line's not quite as good as it once was, at least not on paper, but it still should be good. In terms of how many, you know, reps at tight end, like the talent at tight end, it probably just improved, right? Clearly, the receiving core is elite. You have an elite running back. Dak has all the weapons and even the right attitude for his team. You don't hear Ezekiel Elliott saying anything about, no, I need to be the guy, as they transition from relying on him to relying more on Dak. And your number one receiver just said that. Dak has every single thing a quarterback needs.
Yeah, I think in order to In order to get to a point where you have three 1K receivers, that means that your run-pass ratio is going to have to be severely tilted towards the pass, and I don't think that's Dallas's DNA. As a matter of fact, I know it's not. You know, they're going to be, and they should be, in the top 15, top 12, top 10 as far as rush percentage is concerned. That's what really serves them best. That's how they have been built. That's why they paid Ezekiel Elliott. If they want to be a team that's going to have three 1,000-yard receivers, then obviously that rush percentage is going to go way down, and they are going to put it in Dak's hands and basically have Dak carry this offense, which personally, I just don't know if overall, in terms of them really trying to be one, NFC East contenders, two, NFC contenders, and three, Super Bowl champions again, I don't know if that's the wisest move. Because when you look at it, in crucial situations, and I know Cowboys fans may or may not want to hear this, I don't really care, but the fact of the matter is this, in crucial moments, fourth quarter, 2 minutes left to go in the game, games that are within a touchdown in terms of score differential, Dak struggled last year. I know it isn't always just about Dak. A lot of it has to do with play calling, you know, route precision on the part of wide receivers, pass protection, all that. Dak struggled in those areas. Dak struggled against good defenses in 2019. So I think to just come out and have it be one of these situations where, you know, the Cowboys think as though that they can be a pass-centric football team. I just don't think that would serve them well. I don't think that would necessarily take them to where they want to go. I think Dallas has to really just let this play out organically, which means have it run through number 21, have it run through Ezekiel Elliott, have the play-action passing game become a big part of their offense as it usually is, and it usually portends success on the football field for them. And if they can eventually get to the point where, you know what, the defense is getting three and outs, they have a lot more possessions, and they're able to throw the ball early and have some success with it, and they wound up having three 1,000-yard receivers, fine. I just don't think that should be their MO. That should be their initial attack in terms of how they want to attack opponents coming right out of the gate. I just don't think that's very smart.
But, Lewis, that's so damning of Dak Prescott. This is why, by the way, I hear what you're saying, and this is why I've been on TV saying, look, I hope Dak gets all his money and everything. It's a hard cap league. You got to rob Peter to pay Paul. The Eagles made a mistake. The Rams made a mistake, and I think Wentz's upside is higher than Dak's or Goff, but he has not earned that contract so far. Goff has obviously hamstrung his franchise with that contract, and Dak Prescott is in that class. If you're telling me, and I also think one day he might be a great quarterback and deserve the money, but that day is not today. If you're telling me, with still what should be an above-average offensive line, largely with continuity, with a receiving core like that and an elite back, that Dak can't rely on your quarterback and just kind of buttress his production with your running back? An elite running back, by the way, that behind a good line, that it's too much to ask Dak to make all the right throws to those three receivers? When C.D. Lamb is the rookie, when Gallup is the number two or number three, with a guy like Amari Cooper is your number one, it's too much to ask Dak. What you're saying is the Cowboys were smart not to give him the deal. But I don't hear anyone arguing that. Like, if you're going to pay someone as though they're elite and then say, yeah, but you can't act as though they're elite, it doesn't add up.
I guess what I'm saying, Max, is this. If it organically becomes that, if he winds up over the course of this year becoming someone who does improve in those crucial situational aspects of the game, and they wind up becoming a pass-centric football team, and that rush percentage goes down because he shows that in the course of his development that he's worth having the game put on him like that, and I wouldn't doubt that that necessarily could happen because, hey, Mike McCarthy may just actually push it that way because of what his MO has been in the past as far as putting things on the quarterback, then so be it. Then good for Dak. Then Dak's going to have Dallas exactly where he wants him regardless. It's either they're going to have to franchise him, give him a huge contract, or he's going to hit the open market and absolutely break the bank. I'm not saying that's out of the realm of possibility. I'm just saying coming out of the gate, though, because of the way this team has been constructed, I don't think it would be wise simply because you sit there and you go, we got Amari, we got Gallup, and we got CD. We need to start throwing this football all over the place because that's why we got these weapons. Well, that's, you know, the reason why you paid Ezekiel is because you thought he was the focal point of your offense. It was run it through the run game and let Dak feed off of that. I think that's why you paid Ezekiel. For order for you to deviate from that means this. Well, maybe we made a mistake. Ezekiel's going to be one of the highest paid running backs. He's not going to get the same number of touches. And basically, you're going in a totally different direction. The hard part about this.
Let me make a mistake with a running back, Lewis. Let me make a mistake with the running back, which is much cheaper than making a mistake with the quarterback. I mean, this is why. This is proving what you're saying right now. My argument over the last bunch of months, the Cowboys wisely. Then now look, they could have gotten Dak on a more team-friendly deal probably 2 years ago. They were pigs about it, right? They had to juice him on the $2 million contract and not get that done. So we all, I think everyone's on the same page with that, seems to me. But at the point where that ship has sailed already, and now you're at the point where, okay, pay him as though he's a top three quarterback or franchise him. My argument was, at that point, you might as well franchise him. Because even if he sets the market, it's going to be by a dollar. It's not like he's going to increase his value so much he's going to break the marketplace, right? Especially if Mahomes didn't. He's not going to do it. In the meantime, everything the Joneses have set up is to see if Dak is the real McCoy. Not the goods. We know he has the goods. Is he the greats? They've set it all up that way. They isolated last year. Is it coach or quarterback? They decided it was the coach that was the problem, you know, predictably. Now they're down to the quarterback, and they went out and drafted him another weapon. Lewis, then they're smart not to have paid him if that's where we are. If you can't to at least see what you got right now by seeing if you can have 3,000-yard receivers, then they're smart to franchise him.
Yeah, look, I think there's no question that Dallas has some reservation, Max. I mean, I don't think you can get around that. And they may have reason to have some reservation as far as putting him at the very top of the pay scale based on some of his situational statistics. And you can't argue against that. The objective data is right there in front of you. You can see it. If you throw on the tape and you actually pull up those situations, whether, you know, time and time again, fourth quarter situations, inside of 2 minutes, third and crucial situations, fourth down and crucial situations, where he has missed throws and or something didn't time up right with the wide receiver, the play call, the pass protection. Again, it's not always just him, but there is something that's giving them pause as far as taking them from paying him very well to paying him elite. And what I'm saying is, do not try to prove a point, you know, as far as, I guess from a coaching staff perspective, do not try to prove that you are the guy to take him to the next level by artificially inflating his numbers and or the balance of the offense just to prove your point.
Question.
Let it happen naturally. If it's one of these things where during the course of the season, you see that, man, he deserves to have to be throwing this ball more. We maybe need to change the balance up as far as how we run the ball and throw the ball. Then fine. Everyone's going to win because that is, I mean, that's the name of the game, right? The name of the game in the NFL is not to prove points. It's to win football games. And if that gives them the best chance to win, so be it, because everyone's going to win and he's going to get his money.
Question, Lewis. In the NFL, especially at the quarterback position, it's a lot of name brand early in a guy's career, in a quarterback's career. And I know Dak wasn't drafted high, but he took the job. And you have a certain kind of sheen on you early on when you get that job. Andy Dalton for years. This is a franchise quarterback. This is not a journeyman guy. We got to hold on to him and build him. And at a certain point, if one team's given up on him, the perception of that guy changes. Right now, Dak, Goff, and Wentz, and I think Wentz is better than the other two, at least with more upside than the other two, but those three guys are still perceived as those shiny new objects and different, I think, than someone like Kirk Cousins or maybe even Garoppolo or someone like that. But Kirk Cousins and Garoppolo got paid like upper middle class quarterbacks. They didn't have market setting contracts, right? Because the thought was they can like captain a ship into the playoffs, maybe win a Super Bowl, but it's not going to be because of them. At what point is that perception applied to Dak? Because what you're saying right now is he's still on the Kirk Cousins Garoppolo tier, right? He's still, which I think Jared Goff is there too. He's still on that tier. And the only difference between him and some other guys is he hasn't been traded yet. At what point is he perceived as more of a solid quarterback and less of a future Hall of Fame kind of guy?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's something that will be, obviously, it's going to be debated throughout this year, because the people who fall on the side of Dak is an elite quarterback, Dak deserves to be paid top of the market money, they're going to say, well, we're coming into this season where it's a new coach, no offseason, things that he couldn't control. There's a pandemic. There's going to be the game's going to be played without fans. There's going to be a lot of things working against him. So you have to give him at least till the end of 2021. On the flip side, you're going to have those people who say, look, there's enough evidence to say this. I think we know what Dak Prescott is. Maybe he takes another jump this year, but I think we know what Dak Prescott is. He does deserve to maybe to be paid in the top five, top six in terms of quarterbacks, but he's not in the upper echelon. It's such a subjective argument because, you know, the criteria with which we use to determine whether quarterbacks are excellent or great or good, they vary from person to person. And it really, it's one of those arguments that there really is no right or wrong answer. The number one thing, though, is this. Are you winning football games for your football team in crucial moments? Mm-hmm. And is your football team overall making noise once you get to the postseason? So far, that hasn't been the case for him. And it wasn't the case for him in 2019. As a matter of fact, when they needed him to be the biggest and for his shoulder pads to be the biggest and for them to put everything on top of him, when they went to Philadelphia late in the season last year, he couldn't deliver. He simply couldn't deliver. Now, I understand he was also injured at the time, but that is a big point. That was a big point of contention as far as the argument is concerned.
For sure. Lewis and Max, I need a one-word answer here. One word, guys. Who's winning the NFC East?
Eagles. I'm saying Philadelphia.
All right. Unanimous. That was easy.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Hindsight, I think, as far as a public safety issue goes, I probably could have made a better quality decision. I was a little naive in that aspect. I went somewhere after a viewing of somebody I considered a mentor, somebody that I looked up to, first black man that I've seen with legal money in my life. And the funeral home was a couple blocks away from, one of my favorite restaurants. It's been documented how much I talk about this place, how much I eat there. And so I just did something that was routine for me. I frequent that place at that time of day, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the afternoon. At the time, I thought I was making a responsible decision.
All right, Lou, we'll open it up there. Look who's here, NBA champion Kendrick Perkins joining the convo. And Perk, you had a strong take on all of this. And, you know, I don't want to be the woman on television defending Lou Will, but it seems like he's a creature of habit. That's his spot. That's where he goes. Tell me this. What are your response to his comments there, Perk?
Well, first of all, we all know that Lou Will is a great guy. All his teammates have nothing but praise, all the guys that have played with him. But with that being said, that's all he had to do from the jump, was just come out and say he messed up, he dropped the ball, he should have made a better decision. Instead of going back and forth with people about, oh, this is his favorite spot, this is where he only went there to get chicken wings. Because what ended up happening was some more evidence came out. And he was in there throwing a few dollars. And it's okay. That's what happens at the Gentleman's Club. You're making it rain a little bit. Some of the dancers told they wasn't supposed to. But besides all that, now here's the issue. He's inserted back into the lineup, right? And now Doc Rivers and his coaching staff got to figure out a whole nother rotation, right? Because they adding their sixth man of the year candidate in Lou Will, a guy that gives them 20 points a night. And now you have to shuffle the lineup. Now guys have to go into another role. And that's the thing. That's the distraction that I was talking about. When you're trying to win a title, when you're a contender, you want to have all your ducks in a row. You want to make sure that this guy knows where he's supposed to be. This guy knows his role, knows that he's going to be playing this amount of minutes. And that's the problem right now for us with the Clippers. They have a lot of firepower, and sometimes you can have too much firepower. But with all that being said, I respect Lou Will as coming out and owning up and saying that he made a mistake, he shouldn't have did it, and now we move on. But now with the Clippers and Doc Rivers, they got to figure out a way to get all these players playing their roles and knowing who they are and the identity of their team.
I was talking to Richard Jefferson before the show, and his take on this was basically what Lou Williams, and because I co-signed the take, what Lou Williams was really saying there is, let's move on. Like, I'm sorry, I messed up. Let's put, he's being a good team guy here. You know, like, I don't want this to be a distraction anymore. I'll say whatever I need to say right now. It's fine. Let's move on and put it behind them. And that's, I think, the way the whole league took it, really, Perk. Like, let's not mess up this bubble thing. This thing's going good. Looks like we're going to get through our regular season, get paid on that that local TV money. We're going to have our cake and eat it, too, because then we're going to have a whole playoffs, and the playoff format's even more exciting because maybe Zion will be in it. Or at least Damian Lillard, right? And so we're going to get all that, and we're going to crown a champion, and we're going to look extra good because MLB and the NFL don't know what they're doing, right? Never mind college football. So it's all going good. I know we got to make an example of Lou Will just so guys know, let's take this seriously. It can't be like, yo, Lou Williams went and did what he had to do, and no one, you know, everything's fine. So I'm going to – no. So they made an example of him. Everyone, including Lou Williams, seems to understand. Let's put it behind us and just get on with what we're getting so right. The NBA keeps getting it right, I think, including in this situation. In terms of the firepower, here's the thing about Lou Williams. He is such a weapon as a sixth man. But, Perk, really the question is, who's on the court at the end of the game? And when you have him along with Kawhi and Paul George, forget about Montrell or obviously Patrick Beverley, right? You have three guys who are very difficult to stop, who can get their own shot at the end of the game. That's an embarrassment of riches for Doc Rivers. And I think he is absolutely a key component to the Clippers team. And the way he's handling it, there's enough lead-up time to the playoffs now. The Clippers are still my favorites.
Well, listen, I agree. But look, they have a lot of firepower. And I agree with you on that, Max. But it's only one basketball. So at the end of the day, say Lou Will is not Lou Will Knight, right? What else is he going to bring to the table? Can he defend? Nah, I don't think so. Because I know one thing. If he was playing against the Lakers when they played the first game of this season of the bubble, they would have been putting him in pick and rolls and forcing him to switch with LeBron, and LeBron would have been having a field day. My thing is, it's only one basketball, Max, and your first two go-to guys are Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Mm-hmm. And if you're not getting your touches, what are you going to do? When you look at this Lakers and you look at this Houston, hold on. When you look at the Lakers and the Houston Rockets team, they know who their go-to guys are. And they have a whole lot of role players, guys that are accepting their roles, and they're going to be stars in their roles. They don't have a lot of guys that demand the ball and ball dominate. And that's the question that I have with the Clippers.
But this is, I totally disagree with you about this point because – Lou Williams is not, to me, he's a team player. Yes, he's an ISO player. Yes, he's a guy who wants the ball. But there's a difference between that and being selfish because his role is usually to score. And the difference with Lou Will on the floor is like, you look at a coach who's going to say, and by the way, LeBron, a coach on the floor who is playing keep away from especially Kawhi Leonard, but also Paul George, right? Now, think about this. If the third option on the Lakers beats you, you're like, damn, how did that happen? If the third option, even on the Rockets, beats you, you're like, look, we didn't let Harden or Westbrook beat us. But if you take away the number one and two options at the end of a game for the Clippers, it's not like, well, Lou Williams beat us. What are we going to do? Yeah, Lou Williams, even if it's not his night, might mess around and beat you. That's a nightmare to say we did everything right. And by that, we mean the ball was in Lou Williams' hand with the game on the line. I'll take that every day. If you're telling me that the other team defended me perfectly and Lou Williams took the game-winning shot, yeah, I could live with that.
And Max, can you please explain to me when you mean LeBron James is, when you just mentioned LeBron James is playing keep away, can you explain that to me?
Well, defensively, offensively, they move the ball. Offensively, they move the ball away from Kawhi Leonard, right? Like, that's not in the last game, but remember when LeBron beat back-to-back Milwaukee and then the Clippers and the Lakers were firing on all cylinders? That was partly because you try to take Kawhi out of the game defensively. You keep the ball away from Kawhi. And LeBron figured that out, and it worked. It wasn't like LeBron took on the challenge of Kawhi one-on-one, as he did most recently with that defensive play at the end of the game. It's like LeBron more took Kawhi out of the game, moved the action away from Kawhi, and that seemed to work. But what I'm saying is, even in you take any sport, it could be Bill Belichick will take your number one and two options away. You can scheme defensively as a coach and think, let's make sure that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, if you could somehow deny them the ball, let's make sure that they're not the ones to beat us. And on any other contending team, if the third option is taking the last shot in the game, you're thinking, great, it worked. Not on the Clippers. On the Clippers, that's a bad deal for the defense. Lou Williams is taking the last shot. Good luck with that.
Well, I tell you what, since you want to talk about taking last shots, I fully got trust in a guy like Danny Green, who's proven on the big stage to be clutch and take the last shot and set finals records for three-point shooting. I got trust in a guy like Deion Waiters, who still don't get enough respect. I got trust in guys like that. I got trust in J.R. Smith, who was part of a championship team who had the greatest comeback in NBA history. I got trust in those guys. Why? Because they're battle-tested, man.
Difference.
And then, by the way, you talk about...
The difference
I wanted
is,
to talk to you about this. Before we go, I didn't get a chance to address you on this. But,
Carmelo.
By the way, LeBron didn't just lock up Kawhi Leonard in the fourth quarter. Every time he guarded Kawhi that game one, he locked them up. And by the way, I told you this, the Clippers do not have an answer for Anthony Davis. Period, point blank.
I agree with you. AD, and they're going to run the offense through AD when those two match up. That's why it's going to be a great matchup. But real quick, Danny Green and at this point J.R. Smith, those are spot-up shooters. The difference is with when you have Lou Williams is he can go get his own shot. And he can do it at an elite level. Show me someone else on a contending team who can do that. The number three option.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Did I think about opting out? When this thing came up, I did not. I have a lot to prove to myself. I have a lot to prove to my organization. I'm going to be completely honest here. I'm tired of being disrespected. So there was no question I was going to play this year.
Super Bowl champion Jeff Saturday here with us. Good to see you, Jeff. Carr just wants a little respect on his name. All right, Max, that's what it is. But tell me this. Max, they're out there in Vegas now. Do you honestly think Carr's the quarterback of the future there?
I don't think so. And if he is, he's going to have to keep proving it. And I mentioned this earlier in the show. Name brands, even though football is the most meritocratic of all the sports because guys don't have guaranteed contracts and you have to evaluate it game to game, name brand matters at quarterback. Like, when you have that veneer of, like, a franchise quarterback, if you're tagged that way, so to speak, in people's minds, you're perceived one way. If you get traded or you leave, you're available once or twice, you're perceived differently. You're perceived more as a journeyman than a franchise quarterback. So I mentioned the group of Dak and Jared Goff, and you could still put Carson Wentz because he hasn't been consistently great in his career. And say, you know, what's the real difference between them and, say, Kirk Cousins or Jimmy Garoppolo, right? They who got upper middle class deals. They didn't kind of reset the market. Or even, I know Teddy Bridgewater doesn't throw it as much, but look at his quarterback win-loss record. And he seems to win a whole lot, right? Why are guys perceived differently? I think it's largely perception. Derek Carr at one point was seen as among the best young quarterbacks in the game, and he was playing like that once upon a time. you know, when Andrew Luck was the next big thing. And he hasn't been able to sustain that, you know, consistently, that high level of play. But he's shown enough of it that he's usually better, or has been so far better than the options to replace him. So Derek Carr is a starting quarterback in the NFL. But that's something different than being a franchise quarterback. A guy who, like, that's the quarterback, we're going to leave him alone, we're not going to ask any questions about it. He has correctly identified the way he's perceived in, I think, around the NFL, which is, he's a starter. Is he a franchise quarterback? That remains a question. So when he says he has something to prove, I agree with him. Can he not? We've seen him hit high levels. Can he hit a high enough level to be considered a franchise guy and then sustain it?
Yeah, I agree with you to a degree. I think he has dialed in on himself pretty well, right? The way people perceive him around the league is, you know, he's not quite that franchise quarterback. I will say this, though, about Derek Carr. His performance is better than people give him credit for, right? If you compared he and Jimmy Garoppolo last year, who takes his team to the Super Bowl and has an opportunity to win it, really one throw away from them upsetting Kansas City and all the hype that we have around Patrick Mahomes. If you look at Derek Carr, 4,000 yards last year, right? I mean, I think he throws four or five fewer touchdowns than Garoppolo and four or five fewer interceptions than Garoppolo. Now, this year will be telling for him, right? 4,000-yard season last year, he needs to start stacking them one on the other. They go get Ruggs. They get another running back to help them out. They have a good offensive line. They get another receiver down in the third. So they have guys, and they're building around him. To say that he has been disrespected, I would say you just got to grow thick skin. I mean, all you got to do is compare it to Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. He is a first-round Hall of Famer. What does Stephen A. call him? A bad man or whatever title he calls him, right? He's got this name for him. They just tried to replace him, right? I mean, there's no respect in the NFL, right? It is earned each and every year. That's just the nature of the business. And it has begun to change recently because how impactful young quarterbacks have been in our game. And so I would say for Derek Carr, just get thick skin, man. That's what you're going to have, because no one will ever just keep handing it over like what you're saying, Max. When you say, yeah, you know, you hear the keys to the car, no one's ever going to question you. He hasn't put himself in that upper echelon. But the reality is this. The difference between if you put him with the San Francisco 49ers, I believe he would be the same guy as Garoppolo, right? I think he's going to do the same thing. It's because the team built around him. What happens for quarterbacks in the NFL is that people identify them a certain way and think, oh, this guy's not very good because his team's not very good. As much as we want to give credit to quarterbacks in the league, very few, and when I say very few, like three, four a year can really take their team and add maybe two wins to their record. Not a whole lot of guys are going to be out, you know, in that category. That's just reality. But people all of a sudden say, oh, he's not a good quarterback, or he's not for the Raiders. The Raiders would have a hard time going to replace him for the system that they're in. It would not be an easy transition for them.
You know something,
now,
Jeff?
Would Tom Brady have been an upgrade? For sure. But how many times has Tom Brady hit the market, right? And that's because Brady's going to change the culture of your team as well, not just be a good quarterback. You follow what I'm saying?
I do. Here's the thing about Garoppolo, though. He starts for the Patriots. He's 2-0. Okay, and by the way, Belichick wants him to replace Brady. That tells you a lot about Garoppolo. And then who wants him? Shanahan. And he goes to San Francisco, and San Francisco can't buy a win before he gets there. Goes 5-0. Gets hurt. Well, maybe the team all turned around. But when he got hurt, Shanahan couldn't do anything with the rest of the team and any replacement quarterback. They lost almost every game. Then Garoppolo comes back. They win almost every game, and they have a lead in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. So we see he's not a big, strong-armed guy. Garoppolo doesn't have elite, eye-popping talent, and yet all the guy does is win. So I hear you comparing Derek Carr and Garoppolo's stats, and I appreciate the difference in the kind of cultures and franchises they go to, but Garoppolo took a franchise that couldn't win, and with him they couldn't lose, and then they couldn't win, and then they couldn't lose again, right? Carr has been on the same franchise his whole career. And in Oakland, he has one winning season. So I agree with you. I think he's a starting caliber quarterback. But there are two things working against him in terms of perception. One, he doesn't put up big fantasy numbers. He puts up nice numbers, right? And then two, he doesn't have winning seasons, only one of them. Now, he has a couple 7-9 seasons. And to tell you the truth, Jeff, in my mind, 7-9 is like league average. It's like a 500-ish team, a break one way or another.
Sure.
Way. Maybe you could easily wind up 8-8, 9-7. But the bottom line is, in his entire career, except for 1 year, he's always lost more than he's won, and he's never put up big eye-popping numbers. So the perception of him is that he is a starter but not a franchise quarterback. I think that's the correct perception. He hasn't proven himself franchise. Are you saying he's better than just a starter?
I think he has the ability. I will say this. I think you pair him with Shanahan and you pair him with John Lynch in San Francisco, you would have a different take on his ability, right? I think when you put him now, Mayock and Gruden may turn it around. They may get rolling. They've added a lot of really good football players, and they continue to build it the right way. It's going to take time to kind of see. But that's what I'm saying. The organization that quarterbacks go to are so much more impactful than people give them credit for. And so when you just look at it, and like you said, some 7-9, they weren't a great team, right? There was kind of chaos always around them. It never just really fits and feels good. It's starting to feel good in Las Vegas. You start thinking, oh, well, this Raiders team, they are adding players. They are adding talent around them. But again, is he a guy that I think adds 2 wins to your record? No, he is not that guy. But is he fully capable of taking this franchise and doing a similar thing in Las Vegas as what's happening in San Francisco? If they put the right guys around him, I do believe he has that ability. That's the problem, though. It's all about the organization. And listen, John Gruden, I will say this about John Gruden. You know, his favorite quarterback's the next one, right? Like, you always kind of feel like that. That's not a comfortable thing for most quarterbacks. If Derek Carr can get into his mind to let that die and not really worry about it and realize this is going to happen to every quarterback that's in his position, people are always going to second guess it and push through and just kind of put the pedal to the metal and ignore all the nonsense that goes around him, I think he has a very bright future. I pull for the guy. I think he could be very good. I think if you let the distractions of what other people say about you and what else is going on about the disrespect, use it for motivation and then let it die, man. Go hit that field and play the best you can play. And take it. Once you take the team, it's all of it's in the past, right? But you got to get that. You got to go back to 12-4 season.
Jeff, you're making a contextual argument for Derek Carr. Like, you know, it's the circumstances. I have a couple things to say about that. Number one, being in the right organization with the right coaches, because it's not just drafting, it's development. That's as important as drafting, right? So that has a compounding advantage. Like, Brady would have been great wherever he went, but would he have been the GOAT had he not been with Belichick, right? It has compounding advantages. And so that's one. I don't know that you could just say, well, put Carr in this situation, because he's been in the situation he's been in for, you know, 5 years or whatever it's been now, right? And we'll see what happens now that Gruden's there over time, and they're in Vegas now, and they had all those draft picks and all that stuff. Two, he is, you would think, was available for the right price and probably wouldn't have been that high. And I didn't see guys like Shanahan going after him. I saw them targeting Garoppolo, right? So when you compare him to a guy like Garoppolo, I know it's anecdotal or contextual, but Garoppolo was the guy that Belichick wanted and he wanted to get rid of Brady from. Garoppolo is the one Shanahan wanted. Garoppolo is the one without whom they could not win, almost literally, and with whom they almost literally can't lose. And none of these, like, it's not like Derek Carr was being constantly, the phone was ringing off the hook with trade offers for Derek Carr. So I think there's a reason for that too. And all that goes into my evaluation of him from afar. I don't hold myself out as an expert in this category, but from afar, as he is a starting caliber quarterback who has shown flashes, but not enough consistency at the highest level to be considered a franchise guy.
All right, we're leaving it there. The Raiders finished 7-9 last season, third in the AFC West, so plenty of room to improve on that note. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take pod. Have a fabulous day.
The Wild Wild West in the race to be the lucky team who gets to face off against King James Lakers. The Grizzlies only have a 1.5 game lead over the Blazers for that eighth seed. The Suns 3 games behind and will have to keep their bubble momentum going if they want to leapfrog the Pelicans, the Spurs, and the Blazers. Big Perk back here with us. And before we get into that eighth spot in the West, Perk, I understand you have something to say to Max.
Oh, yeah, I do, Molly. Listen. Early this morning, it was about 1 in the morning, y'all, Eastern time. I tweeted out at Max because I knew he was asleep. I wanted him to wake up and see my tweet, and I know he saw it. I need a public apology to Carmelo Anthony from Max Kellerman before we go on with this show. I need a public apology because he said that my man Melo was washed. He said that he was washed. I need a public apology.
Okay. I am man enough to issue a public apology when it is deserved. But this is not that time, Perk. I don't owe anyone an apology. He was playing. He was released by two teams. Why do you think that is? Because he wasn't playing well, Perk, and he was old, and the league was changing. He had to make adjustments to his game. He had to understand that, like, at the time, really, matter of fact, he had, I think, 6 or 7 at least DNPs, like coaches' decisions on the Rockets, I want to say, and they had high hopes, and both in OKC and in Houston. No one was saying, like, Carmelo's a bad guy. Carmelo's not trying to do the right thing. He was trying to do the right thing, but he couldn't defend. He was not making the most of catch-and-shoot opportunities, and he was no longer an ISO scorer whose level of talent was pitched high enough due to age, where he is going to carry a team offensively. And then it was going around, as Richard Jefferson pointed out earlier in the show, that too many teams were like, and I never said he didn't deserve a roster spot somewhere, but too many teams were like, he can't be the ninth guy on the bench playing 15 minutes because there's too much pressure. He's a future Hall of Famer. So I never said he wasn't clutch. I said he was. Never said he couldn't play in the NBA. I said he could. But that he was washed, that he and all the evidence pointed to that fact. Now, he is playing much better, and he has proved people like me who thought he couldn't do it wrong. But I wasn't going on anything but the facts. And I spoke the truth according to the facts. He has since then proven me and other doubters wrong. He is a starting caliber NBA player on a good team.
Well, Max, first of all, you said that he was washed. When you say that someone is washed, that means that they're done with. He's not done with. Listen, the problem that teams had with Melo was that he had a problem with taking a lesser role. And that's what a lot of superstars have to do. When Father Time catch up with you and you have to take a lesser role and be a third or fourth option guy, you have some people struggle with that, right? No. He had to look himself in the mirror and say, you know what? I'm not a first option guy no more. I'm not a second option guy no more. But I am a third or fourth option guy. One thing about Carmelo is that he is a walking bucket. Same thing with Jamal Crawford, like I told you. Before he got hurt last night in the game yesterday against the Milwaukee Bucks, he was tearing them up. Listen, some guys are just, they come out of their mother's womb just knowing how to play the game of basketball.
Getting
and
buckets.
Put the ball in the hole. And Carmelo Anthony is one of them. The problem was he wasn't washed, Max. He just couldn't. He just had a problem with accepting a lesser role. Now, here it is. He done went looked himself in the mirror for over the last year and a half. He got an opportunity. He got in better shape. He slimmed up. He looking like the Melo from Syracuse. Oh. And guess what? Down the stretch, Dame Lillard has been having full trust in Melo, and he has been delivering. He's been hitting timely shots. He's been rebounding at a high rate. And he's been defending. He's been defending. Now, listen.
I agree.
All I'm asking is a public apology. Okay, if you agree, then give a man a public apology by saying that
An apology would be, see, you just admitted everything I said. If he can't accept the role, therefore he's out of sync with the team, which, by the way, at the time, it seemed he was accepting his role. Like, what you heard from the teams, what you heard from Carmelo, at least what they paid lip service to, is he is accepting the role. He is doing everything we ask. He just wasn't doing that well enough because his game was not predicated on any one thing that he could do better than anybody. It's how well-rounded his overall scoring game was. He wasn't the greatest three-point shooter in the world, but he could hit the three-point shot. He could post up. He could do so many things. By the way, even an underrated passer, when he would draw the defense, he would find the open man when he was at his best very well, I thought. And he was always a clutch player, but he failed to do anything with OKC. He failed to do anything with the Rockets, so I said that. And at his age, it's reasonable to assume he's washed. I was wrong about that,
He's
showing. But even then, Perk, you just said two things had to happen. He needed to make an additional psychological adjustment to get his ego in check in terms of where he belonged in the scheme of things, and he had to get in better shape to play defense. So now that he's done according to you, he's a valuable NBA player again.
That's cool. That's cool. But to say someone is washed, that means that they're done with. That means that they can't play no more. That's when you say someone is washed. That means that they're done. He's not done. He never was done. I said that he had a problem with taking a lesser role from always being a number one guy. And here it is, you're saying the same thing, that he's proving you wrong, that he is a valuable starter on a contender team. And
I've become one again.
You apologize for saying.
Why would I apologize for telling the truth, though?
You weren't telling the truth. He wasn't done. He wasn't washed. Washed mean that you cannot play the game of basketball no more. That's what you basically said. And I said that's not true.
Guys.
That's all.
Listen.
When new evidence comes in, I change my opinion.
Okay.
This is new evidence that he's providing us with. I was wrong. That's a difference between saying I was wrong about something and I did someone wrong. You apologize when someone wrong. I didn't do Melo wrong. I told the truth.
Enough on the definition of apology.
I'm sorry for saying you were washed, Melo. You're not washed.
There we go. That's my guy, Max Kell. So big of you, my man. All right, can we guys talk? Can we talk about this, though, this eighth spot? Because the Blazers looked really good last night. Who do you think, Perk, I'll start with you. Who should we want to see get the eighth seed in the West to face the Lakers?
It got to be the Portland Trail Blazers. To me, with Jaren Jackson going down for the Memphis Grizzlies haven't been playing well, right? And I'm looking at this Portland team with Dame Dolan and C.J. McCollum in the backcourt, but they have a guy. And I was concerned because I said Trevor Ariza didn't make it to the bubble due to family issues. But Gary Trent Jr. have stepped up tremendously for them. And the big fella looks good. So I'm looking at this Portland team, especially after the huge win against the Rockets last night. And there's no doubt in my mind that they're going to get that AC. They're going to get that AC. You could mark it down right now. They will be playing the Lakers come playoff time. They're getting that number eight spot.
Yeah, I hope not, though. If you're asking me who I want to see in the eighth seed, I'd like to see maybe Phoenix, because I'm a Lakers fan. I take the Clippers because I'm telling you the truth. You know, I think Kawhi is the best player in the world. I think the Clippers are the best team, but I'm rooting for the Lakers. That's the team I actually want to win, and I'm scared of the Blazers for the Lakers. I think the Lakers win that series. I think the Lakers should be favorites. I think they win the series, but Perk, last time there was a shortened season, an eighth seed, the Knicks, wound up in the finals. Like, weird things can happen, especially in the bubble, the whole thing with COVID. This is the year where weird things can happen, like an eighth seed knocking off a one seed, and the Blazers are just the kind of team to do it. And as a Lakers fan, I don't want any parts of them. I think the Lakers have beat them, but I can't say I'm sure. And I would rather, much rather, play Phoenix, let's say.
Guys, well, one other thing I want to get into
first of
here,
all,
Perk.
Go ahead, Molly. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, if you want to say something else. No. I just wanted to get into about the Nets, guys, because the Bucks last night, that was the largest upset in 27 years, the Nets taking down the Bucks. Obviously, one of the major stories in the bubble. Perk, go wherever you want here, but just what's the biggest story to you so far that we've seen down there in Orlando?
Well, Molly, first of all, can you get Jay Will and Stephen A. back on this show? Because we talked about this, and I told them when the Bucks lost to the Milwaukee, when the Bucks lost to the Houston Rockets, I said it was a big deal because the Milwaukee Bucks are losing their defensive identity. And they are. Giannis played in the first half yesterday, and they gave up 70 points to the Nets. Now, moving on. The biggest story, T.J. Warren for the Indiana Pacers. He has been on a tear. He dropped 53 points, mainly on max guy, Ben Simmons, who he got picked to win Defensive Player of the Year, from my understanding. And then he backdoored last night and had 37 and 11. He had 17 in the first quarter and didn't miss a single shot. This is a guy that has been averaging close to 20 points a game on 50% shooting all year long, but haven't got the praise that he deserved. And if I'm the Phoenix Suns, I'm feeling some type of way because they traded this man for a second-round pick and cash considerations. To the Phoenix Suns, James Jones, you my brother, I love you, but shame on you. Shame on you.
T.J. Warren is the best story, clearly. You're right about that. There's no argument. But I think a story worth watching that can have a real influence on the playoffs is Kristaps Porzingis. People forget, when he got hurt, he was still getting better. He was already a real good all-star level player, still getting better. 7'3", can hit the outside shot, defend the rim, score in the post, do whatever you really want him to do. And the injury he had, it's usually a year to get back and then a year to get back to where you were. But it's not like where he was a plateau. He was ascending rapidly. I think he's back to that now based on the way he's been playing in the bubble. And if he's a high-level all-star who's still getting better paired with an MVP-caliber player in Luka, I thought the Mavericks were going to be a whole lot of in the near future. I didn't know it would be already, but already look out for the Mavs.
No question. All right, that'll do it for us here on First Take. Perk, thank you so much for hanging with us. I can't believe you got Max to do it. It's absolutely unbelievable. Max holding it down,
as always.
Lakers Thunder tonight, Celtics Nets. We'll be back tomorrow, everyone. That's on ESPN. Take care. Be safe.